All right, everybody, thank you so much for joining us today. I am Michelle Morris from Consolidated Planning Group. We've got Beth Duncan with us today, and she is going to share some fantastic information about transitioning your special needs teen into adulthood. So before we get started, I just wanted to go through kind of the rules of the road for us today. We are presenting in webinar mode here on Zoom, which means that we cannot hear you or see you. So if you have any questions or comments, please put them in the chat box, and we're going to get to as many of your questions as possible. We like to have it a little bit more conversational in our webinars, so feel free to put your questions in the chat box. If you want to comment on what other people are saying, that's great. This webinar is being recorded, and you will receive a copy of a link to where we have it saved on our YouTube channel. Plus, you'll receive a copy of the slides. We also put our webinars onto our podcast. So if you're listening on our podcast and you want a copy of these slides, you can email us contact@cpgcares.net. And we will send you a copy of those slides. That's contact@cpgcares.net. All right. So Consolidated Planning Group is a special needs planning firm. First of all, we are financial advisors. We do life insurance and financial services, securities, things like that. But we focus on families who have special needs loved ones. We are based just outside of Houston, Texas. We serve families all across Texas and all across the United States. We have over 30 years of experience. We are members of the Million Dollar Roundtable, which you might not have heard of. It's just an industry award, letting people know that a lot of families trust us to help them with their financial picture. We're also members of the Special Needs Planning Academy, and we are certified as National Social Security Advisors. So families really come to us for things like protection plans for their family, lifetime care plans for their kids. You know, once you're gone and you're unable to take care of your children anymore, it's going to take some money to take care of them. We help you figure out how much that's going to be and how you can set that aside for your child's future. We do a lot of talk about transition planning, which is what we're going to be focusing on today with Beth. We help families with their ABLE accounts and other ways to save money for their kids in places where it will not affect their state or federal government benefits. And of course, education and advocacy, because we've been through this and we know it's complicated and difficult, and it's a lot to unravel, especially when you're in the thick of it and you're going through all this. You don't know which information is the most important and where you need to turn. We know all that stuff. So we definitely can help you with that. So one thing I do like to point out is that you are really truly in the right place, because when you think of financial advisors, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, there are over 263,000 financial advisors across the entire United States, 263,000. But out of those, fewer than 200, not 200,000, just 200 period, focus on special needs planning. So that is fewer than a tenth of a percent of all the financial advisors in the United States who do what we do. So we're glad that you found us. We're glad that you are here today. One little bit of advice about planning, about special needs planning to get you started. You know, people always ask, and I'm sure this keeps you up at night as well, who will take care of my children when I am no longer here or I'm no longer able to do it myself? So what we want to say about that is planning early is key, because the sooner you get that planned, the sooner you can sleep at night again, you can make arrangements going in the right direction, you can keep that focus as you're making other decisions along the way, that you know what's going to happen in the future. Plus, you have a lot more time to make adjustments and changes and make more of an impact on your future if you plan ahead. Think about what's going to happen after high school. There's educational options, vocational options, residential options, but some of these things, these programs might have waiting lists. So it's really important. It's really important that you plan ahead and find a good resource for your family and put your name on the waiting list if there is a waiting list. Sorry about the spam in the chat box. We get that almost every webinar we do, but I just got rid of it. And we will send out the slides and the recording for this webinar to everybody. And finally, the last piece of advice about special needs planning that we want you to think about upfront is to be careful when you just say, well, Jacob's older sister, Natalie, is going to take care of him when I'm gone. Well, you never know. Maybe Jacob feels that Natalie, maybe a little bit of resentment towards her because he doesn't want her to act as mom. He wants her to act as sister. And you're not my mom. I can imagine that argument happening. Maybe Natalie, once she gets a little bit older and she has her own family and her own career and her own goals, you know, it might be a little bit burdensome for her to take care of Jacob in the future. And we want them to have a happy, pleasant, loving relationship, not one that is obligatory. So just be very careful and make careful considerations before you just say, a sibling is going to take care of my loved one. Okay. So without any further ado, having given you a little bit of information about us, I would like to introduce you to Beth Duncan. She's going to help us today with some great information about helping your special needs teen make that jump from childhood to adulthood. You know, the law says that when they turn 18, they're adults, even though they're still our little babies in our hearts. Beth is going to help us make that easier. So Beth, if you would just take it away and give us your information.
Hi, everybody. It's great to have you. Good afternoon. I think Michelle started us off on the right foot because I'll repeat a couple of things she said regarding financial planning to the planning that I'm going to talk about today, which is more related to life after high school and what life looks like and what the person is doing every day, who they interact with every day, what their goals are, and just who they want to be. I mean, we all go through, or most of us, I should say, go through the high school experience and know just how difficult that is to think about and plan for who you're going to be and what you're going to do. So just want to go over some things regarding thinking about what adulthood looks like and just how to help your person prepare for it. So again, as Michelle said, I'm happy to have people comment in the chat, any kind of questions or comments. I'm hoping that everybody is here today with somebody who is either coming upon the transition time of high school to adulthood. Maybe they've already transitioned and you're still just looking for some answers there, or some tips, because transition isn't a, you know, there's not a date you can put on it. It happens over years, sometimes a lot of years. I think sometimes that I might still be transitioning. I know that when that verb came out, adulting, I hated it and I use it all the time now. So we'll go on to to the next slide, kind of defining adulthood. So we think about what is adulthood. And I know from my experience, and let me go ahead and stop because I didn't really address that. So my name is Beth Duncan. I work for Texana Center in the Rosenberg and Fulshear areas of Fort Bend County, Texas. I am a board certified behavior analyst licensed in the state of Texas and have worked in many, many realms of helping people who have autism or developmental disabilities. I've worked the spectrum from helping people who were admitted to psychiatric treatment facilities to people in school. One of the things I'm doing now that I really love is we have a cafe. The purpose of the cafe isn't because we want to sell our fabulous food and wonderful baked goods. We do that, but it is because we wanted to have people who wanted to learn job skills come and intern. So we provide paid internships for the folks at our cafe in Fulshear. So that's where I'm coming from when I talk today. So in defining adulthood, we talk about things like, what is your career going to be? And by career, I mean a kind of an open general career, whether your career is, I'm going to be a career horseback rider in the Olympics, I'm going to do dressage, and that's what I'm going to do. Or your career is, I'm going to work in food service, or I'm going to open a daycare, or I'm going to have a construction business. There's just a huge range of things that are considered career. There's also, you know, the very important career of, I'm going to be a mom and I'm going to focus on raising and caring for my children. Other aspects of adulthood are where we live, which it could be in mom's basement, in with a cousin, in an apartment, temporarily, sometimes in a dorm room while I'm getting my education, living in an apartment that's attached to other apartments where people have support services, whether I live in a group home. So where you live is a factor in adulthood and how you live out your adulthood. A huge factor that I feel like sometimes doesn't get strongly addressed is leisure, which is, you know, again, kind of a global definition of, how do we spend our time? What do you do when you're not taking care of yourself, taking care of the place you live to include all of those chores, such as cleaning, paying the bills, maintenance, making sure things are stocked up, whatever it takes to take care of where you live, taking care of loved ones that you might be responsible for helping out with. But anything that's not in that time, that's not eating or sleeping, is open for other activities. And a lot of us like to fill that with hobbies and sports and health activities, such as maybe walking or bike riding, going to the gym. Lots of things come under that open time that's not covered by daily necessities, although I'm sure some will argue that their gym time or maybe their crafting time is a daily necessity time. So leisure is just a huge place where adulthood happens, and we need to think about that in planning for our loved ones as they move out of school and into their adulthood. And then, of course, especially if your loved one happens to have that diagnosis of social interactions, of autism, social interactions can be a challenging part of adulthood, and our individuals need to be able to have appropriate social interactions with all the people they run in those other areas. If they're on a sports team, having appropriate social interactions. If they're living in an apartment or need to have a roommate to live more independently or just get along with a cousin that they're staying with. Those are important places to have social interactions. And of course, career. I would say, as someone who's interviewed and hired a lot of people, the social interaction part of hiring someone to work for me is really important. They need to be able to have really good skills in that area. I can teach them other things, but the basic social skills are something that I think most employers are really, really looking at. So those are just four areas as folks transition that they need to be considered, and they need to have some support in and have some education in. So let's talk about during school. What does it look like when somebody's attending school, the pre-transition time? Before they're leaving school, they have structured socialization. You socialize with who's in your classroom. You socialize with the person you get assigned to do a group activity. You socialize with the people you eat lunch with, the people you're in the hallway. That's a little less structured, but there's somebody around. Somebody in the hallway says something you don't like. you're going to be careful of your response, possibly because there's going to be somebody who's going to be there to see that. So there's the socialization is there, but there's a lot of oversight and a lot of understanding about this is how you behave at school. When you're in school, you're learning to learn. You are guided. You have someone who has a lesson plan. There's somebody telling you this is what we're learning today. Hopefully they're learning to learn also, and just how to seek information, how to confirm information, and those other aspects. But it's guided. Another thing in school is organizing and problem solving. That's something that hopefully is happening while someone's attending school. Organizing can be, you know, a huge range of things, from just organizing information that they've gathered to write a paper or put together some kind of a, maybe an art project or some kind of a display project, and being able to problem solve, you know, the huge range of problems that happen while you're in school, whether it be related to your working or your learning or the project that you're doing or getting along with folks, interacting with the teacher. Hopefully leaving school or while they're in school, before they've left, they're learning generalization of skills, which just means that what they're learning, they're able to put into play in other areas of life, which, you know, is something that we all, I think, talk about when we're in school, where especially like, oh, for example, maybe trigonometry class, when am I ever going to apply this? But I've always said, you know, you're learning how to think. So what you learn might not be as useful sometimes as learning how to think, learning how to apply yourself, learning how to attend to things that you can't imagine how this matters except for the grade, but just learning how to learning that anything that you have practiced and done can have some sub skills in it that are applicable in another setting, whether it's just attending to things, completing something that you don't particularly want to do, dealing with feedback that's not necessarily positive when you're learning something that you feel like isn't very useful and you don't do well on it.
Well, and Beth, it's not just whether or not it's useful, but learning to deal with things that are hard. For me, yes. Math was always hard, but learning how to deal with hard things and how to, you know, get through that and how to work through a challenge is very rewarding.
Yes. And to those people who say, you know, oh, well, I had to learn that trigonometry and I've never used it since. Again, it's, well, but that's trigonometry that you also learned in trigonometry that you were probably taking that class for a purpose, and you just learned that I don't like this. I'm not necessarily good, but I have to do it. And is there anybody out there who has to, there's something that you have to do. You're not necessarily good at it. You don't like to do it, but you have to do it. Mm-hmm. I can think of one great example that I'm pretty sure most of you do every April, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's just an example. If you got through trigonometry, learned how to do that, what you learned was there are some things that you might not like and might not see a use for, but you've just got to do it. And then the last one that just really can't be emphasized enough, I'll refer to it a couple more times, is safety with community and relationships. And we'll get to that one, because that one's a big one that I kind of see in my experience working with a lot of parents. There doesn't seem to be much middle ground. It's either I don't really want to go there, especially related to that relationship part, or I absolutely need information on that. I need, where's the training? Where can I sign my person up? How do we deal with this? So people either want to hide their head in the sand, or they're all over it and a huge advocate and trying to figure out how they're going to address that particular very difficult and very ongoing conversation about your individual and their relationships as they go through life. So that's kind of during school. And again, just reiterating what happens as your school age. So school age, you attend class, you do the work, you follow the teacher's instructions, right? It's, you know, it's structured, it's organized, you know what to expect. And I say that because that is, the expectation is a big issue with, once that school life ends, what's the expectation? What as a person with that developmental disability or autism, what am I supposed to be doing? And there's no longer the next grade or the graduation. It's the wide open world. So it is a big transition. And sometimes we really need to think about that outside of our own perspective of having gone through it ourselves. So once you're an adult, you are organizing your schedule. You're trying to fill your time or not knowing how to fill your time with hobbies and other, what I labeled earlier as leisure activities. You've got work, hopefully of some sort or some meaningful day. And by work, I don't even mean paid work necessarily, but just how you spend your time to take care of things, and whether that means you need to take care of things by earning money and working in a paid profession, or you're working to take care of things by helping around the house, helping someone else, volunteering, or some other meaningful day activity. And then of course there's the self-care, because if you go back up to school age, you don't get away with a lot of not doing your self-care. You know, probably you've got family that's going to say something before you leave the house. But if you're going to school, you're attending a place with lots of observers every day. And somebody's going to let you know if you've worn the same thing all this week, or if you're not brushing your teeth, or if you're extremely sunburned, or, you know, losing a lot of weight, or, you know, there, people have eyes on your self-care in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And as you become an adult, you have fewer people with eyes on seeing you regularly and giving you feedback about that. So I just wanted to throw in real quickly some resources, and it's from the Autism Speaks webpage that, you know, you can just Google and get right there. And it doesn't necessarily mean your person has to have a diagnosis of autism, because there are a lot of things that can apply to any person with autism or another diagnosis that means that they need a little extra support. So if you go to the Autism Speaks website, they have things like skills assessments and transition roadmaps and housing toolkits, just some examples of some things. It's a great place to start to kind of look over some documents and just kind of get an idea of what transition looks like and some tools that people could be using. You want to be well informed. If we're talking about people who are still in school, these are things that your school folks should be using, not necessarily these specific things, but they do in school use skills assessment and talk about transition, and that involves, you know, potentially where are they going to be living after they graduate. So you want to arm yourself and have some knowledge and be a little familiar with at least a few varieties of this. And I just wanted to make sure the slide in that Autism Speaks was a resource for folks. And again, it doesn't have to be for only for folks who have a diagnosis of autism. It's got some just good information that generalizes. And I threw this in here, and this is one of my favorite slides. I put it in a lot of presentations I do on different subjects, just because I think it's a great way. I just want people to look at the first panel in this cartoon, because you've got somebody who's in a situation and they see on the horizon that there's somebody else, it looks like, in some, you know, small something floating toward them, and what they're thinking as they're on their island is, oh, it's a boat. But just there's ability to flip their perspective and think about things from another point of view, or hopefully many other points of view. So you look at the second panel and it's the person in the boat. Who knows how long he's been floating, how hungry he is, how starved he is for interaction. And all he can do is say, oh, land. So just want to make sure that people are thinking about taking perspective, because that's something that sometimes can be hard to do, or people just forget about taking the perspective of the individuals. And that doesn't necessarily mean parents aren't always the best about that. Sometimes you want to make sure that the siblings of your individual are thinking about perspective as the transition process goes on. You want to be sure that the teachers are also thinking about taking perspective of what's happening to their students in the future. And again, I just think that's a helpful slide to remind us all that we have our perspective, and it really takes effort and thought to put into practice the taking of others' perspectives. And that means a lot of talking and cooperation. So transition skills that you want to make sure that your individuals have and that they're working on if your individual is still in school. These have been identified as some really important areas for the person. And some people think, oh, well, transition skills, and they can get a little bit into the weeds about really specific things like, oh, well, he's transitioning out of school. So he needs to know how to ride the bus to go out and do activities because he's not got the school bus, which is absolutely a great skill, but there's more global skills that if they've got these abilities, they can generalize to other areas of their life. So one of the first is the ability to self-assess. And that just means they are able to think about where they are, what they're doing, what their needs are, what's happening, either in a global area or in the situation that they find themselves in socially or at work or in their daily activity. Does this work for me? Is this good for me? Am I happy here? Am I able to enjoy this and access it when I need it? I was almost kind of going into the next area of a good skill to have, which is awareness of need for accommodations. And I will just mention that I had attended a presentation just recently where a couple of folks were talking about their situation with their loved ones in transitioning. And in a transition type meeting, somebody mentioned in front of a mom's teenage son, something about autism. And the son leans and looks at mom and says, "Who's got autism?" And she said she'd never felt that it was really important to stress to him that that was his diagnosis. But also, you're not going to want to stress that, oh, this is your diagnosis and this is your limitation. But that is an area of awareness of that might be something that somebody else mentions, and you need to kind of know what that is and be able to explain that if the person is verbal enough to be able to explain that diagnosis to whatever their level of understanding is, which may just be, hey, yeah, I have autism. Sometimes I get really distracted. Hey, did you see that horse over there? And they don't need to have a lot of explanation, just something that gets them through the interactions that they have. But they do need to be aware of their accommodations, because then they know how to ask for those things, which is the fourth part of the transition skills that I've got up here. So, and that should have been third. So they need to be able to know what their need for accommodation is. They need to be able to advocate for themselves. And they also need to know the rights for their accommodation. So they can kind of assess and say, oh, you know, this particular activity or work thing that I'm doing. So activity could be, you know, playing on a sports team or golfing or going to the gym. They need to be able to self-assess. Sorry, I just had lights go out. I was afraid I had a power cut. We had one of those the other day and we all went home early. It did not resolve itself quickly. The ability to self-assess leads to knowing what accommodations might help them do something that they want to do. They need to be able to advocate to say, I need this to help me do this at this job or in this activity. And they also need to have some awareness of their rights. So if they do find themselves in a situation where what they're needing to help them be successful isn't available, but they have a right to get it, that they have some awareness of that. And again, there's various levels of this knowledge and awareness. And it could be just the knowledge of, I need to ask my person, whoever, you know, is my main caregiver. Hey, they told me I couldn't have that at work. Or, hey, I went to, you know, play ball at the gym and they told me I couldn't have so-and-so. So they don't necessarily have to be fluent in these things. They just have to have an awareness so that they can ask somebody to help advocate for them and help tell them what their accommodations might be and their rights to those accommodations.
I think that's, you know, that's very important. I will admit I love watching TikTok, and I saw one just yesterday talking about somebody who worked at a festival setting and they needed an emotional support dog with them, or a dog with them. And the person who ran the fair was trying to say, no, you can't work here if you have a support animal. And they were like, well, yes, I can. Just being able to stand up to your, to whoever. I mean, even if you go into a restaurant, you know, and the hostess doesn't know all the rules and regulations. And of course, her first thought is, you can't bring a dog into a restaurant. But yes, of course you can. If you have, you know, the rights, and you know that, you can stand up for yourself much better.
Exactly. Yes. And again, it's not important that they are scholars on this, just that they have some awareness and some plan to address that need were it to come up. And the plan is either I'm going to tell you all about it because I know chapter and verse and this is my thing, or my plan is I know how to contact, or I know to turn to the person I'm with and say, hey, I know that I can have this thing. And can you help me here? And so again, back, if we're talking about folks who are still in school, you should have transition professionals with your school that are working with your person. And you just want to make sure, I wanted to have some pointers, just make sure that they are good listeners and they're incorporating your objectives. And I know that that can be a real challenge. I've worked in schools, and I know my thing that I say with schools is, you know, the schools are only as good as their administrators and teachers. And I know schools with fabulous administrators and teachers, and I know schools with not great administrators, but fabulous teachers, and schools that have great administrators, not so great teachers, or a teacher. So it can really, really vary. And I just urge people to be that squeaky wheel in a careful way, because you don't want to alienate or, you know, sometimes you do want to be that difficult person, but having dealt with some people who are very good advocates for themselves and their person, the ones who are understanding, but the squeaky wheel, yes, I understand this. I understand I'm asking a lot, but I want this. I need this for my person. The ones that really advocate in a positive way and continue to ask. And I've learned that lesson myself as a professional that answers a lot of questions and works to help a lot of people. I benefit from the squeaky wheel sometimes, because there's a lot to know out there, and I've been very grateful and told folks so when I've talked to them and they've called me, and then they called me again, or they've approached me and they're like, well, this still, you know, I need some more help here. And it oftentimes can lead me to find resources and links that I didn't know existed. So I advocate for being the squeaky wheel.
Yes. When I always say that you should be firm, but also polite and friendly. Firm, but yes. Friendly, yes. Is what really works well.
Yes. Understand that they're trying to do their job, and they have their own stressors and their own limits, but you know, hey, we're working together on this. Being cooperative also, saying, hey, we're both in this and I need you to help me. Oftentimes that word help really means that people are willing to jump in, rather than I need you, or you're not. The blame game's not really helpful, but hey, I need your help and I know you can do this for me. So yes, if the expectation should be that they're incorporating what you and your individual are wanting to work on in the transition, and that they work collaboratively and the conversation goes back and forth. And I said I would mention this, but in transition, this is a huge, huge part of going from being surrounded in a school to people you know and people that are at some level responsible for you, to going to work, leisure, community. And I put in this little note, and that means online and in real life, because we all know that online is a whole nother ball game. but people need to be prepared with relationship and sexuality information, strategies, skills. It's probably not the best to think that things aren't going to happen. They're not going to be exposed. They need to be able to at whatever level works for them. Again, this isn't something where it's a one size fits all and everybody needs to be taught, you know, the whole realm of human sexuality and all that that might encompass. They just need to understand safety skills and some level of sexuality and relationships and what that may mean for other people, but just what's appropriate for them. And that would be somewhat individualistic for each person, but it needs to be addressed is all I'm saying. I'm not giving a pattern for exactly how that needs to be done, but it does need to be addressed so that that person has some level of skills to navigate what they're going to experience when they're not in the school setting anymore.
I haven't seen any questions come into the chat box yet, but I promise when one does, I will let you know. Don't forget that you can put your questions in the chat box. Also, real quick, I want to just say, I've seen about 10 more people join since we started. So I just want to mention that this is being recorded. We will send you the slides and the video later on today to your email. So, okay, sorry for that short interruption.
That's okay. Yes. And I second that if you have questions, please feel free to type them into the chat. I'd be happy to answer them as best I can, or there's contact information at the end of the slides if you'd like to get hold of me with your questions afterwards. So planning for the future, I definitely want to make sure that people are thinking about what are short-term plans and goals and what are long-term plans and goals, because as I mentioned earlier, the whole, people sometimes refer to it as the cliff that ends with high school, and then it's just the wide world out there and it's time to jump off and go into the future. But there's the summer after high school, that's short term. What is that going to look like? And just planning, because that is the very first, you know, long period of time where people are adjusting to, okay, you're not going school clothes shopping. You're not thinking about what teacher you're going to get next year. You're not looking forward to seeing those same classmates next year. It's, you know, summer's going to happen and then summer doesn't end. It continues. It doesn't end with a new school year. It ends with fall and the same thing. You're not going back to school necessarily. So those short-term goals as to how that first time out of school should look, what plans are made to help them move into that new world, and then the long-term plans. And I'm going to throw this in because I keep thinking, the older I get, I keep thinking, okay, I'm going to stop seeing that people are, it's not going to happen. And, you know, this is not a very bright thing I do because I continue to see it and just saw it this week. And by it, I mean that occasion where a family says, we are going to take care of our individual. That is what we're going to do. And we haven't made contingency plans because no way is my person going to ever live in a group home. The state's not taking care of my individual. This isn't happening. You know, this, they have sort of one plan or maybe a plan and a half where that half plan is, you know, not really thought through or not easily implementable. So I just really encourage folks to, you know, make your plan, but also look at in your plan, is there anything that can conceivably go wrong? And I don't mean likely to go wrong. I mean, conceivably. I've had families where they had opportunity to get a service where their person could eventually choose to live in a group home. And the family said, absolutely not. That's not going to happen. But in some aspects or some situations, the individual became more than the family could care for, not necessarily even because of the individual's behaviors or medical involvement, because of the family's medical involvement or family splits or family deaths, because I'm sorry, but we all do die. And having a plan for our individuals when we pass. And I know, Michelle, definitely that's a big part of what you do, but just, nobody's saying put these plans in place. Are these actions in place that you don't want? Like, you don't have, I'm not saying, oh, put your person in a group home because you may not be able to care for them. But there are times when that option is available and people are not putting that into place as far as a possibility for the future. Here in our area of Texas, there's the possibility that you can get offered a waiver service that comes with residential placement. And just yesterday, talked to a woman who had friends who was offered one of the waiver services for their individual just a few years ago and said no. Mind you, the offer of the waiver comes with a whole range of services, group homes being one, but a whole range of services. They said no to the whole range of services. Mom passed away, and just recently dad passed away. And now that person did not have an option to go to a group home. From what I understand, there was a scramble and some plans were put in place, but it's helpful to know that looking at services, some services you can take part of the service and not the whole thing, because there are other services you might use later or might never use, but just making sure that you have your options. More options are better than fewer options is what I'm saying. So again, in this, just getting with your individual and their loved ones, talking about both short-term and long-term and longest-term. And just looking at, again, not just what you think is going to happen, but what could happen, and knowing that you have some options and some plans for that. So I know all of this sounds easy, transition planning, but there are a lot of obstacles to this. And actually, I think there was a question somebody was asking about some books. That's something, if you want to email me, I've got my contact information. I can hopefully answer a little better offline. So obstacles to a person's successful transition. And again, transition is not just one step. It doesn't happen just after high school. It's ongoing. Situations change. People change. Wants changed. Goals change. But we all have things that we have to work on. Communication skills are one of those. And I know that people find that that can be a huge barrier if somebody has not practiced and learned good communication skills to the best of their ability in multiple situations. And communication skills even overlap into safety skills. And safety skills, again, it depends on where you're going, what you're doing. There's numerous safety skills that need to be taught. And knowing what your goals are with a plan for the future is helps focus the safety skills to that area. Just obstacle is the lack of experience, not really knowing what it's going to look like when you don't have a place to report to all through the school year. You don't have the same set of people. You don't have a teacher who's in charge and administration who's looking out for the whole school. So one aspect of addressing that would be to look at high school as busy as it can be, but looking at getting in some more life experience before they transition out of high school, and whatever that be, whether it's volunteering, getting involved with a sports group or church group, or just, I say group, whatever that be, whether that be a knitting group at the local library that's offered for free, and just really encouraging people to make a stretch, to encourage their individuals to make a stretch, and not just be, okay, what do you want to do? Well, if you're not exposed to a lot of information and aren't a particularly curious person or family, you may not have a lot of things that you would pick to do because you're not aware of them, or you haven't engaged in them. For instance, I have a young man that I work with who doesn't like to do a whole lot, and I'm always trying to stretch him. And we have a dance class that was available, and we had that dance class available for, unfortunately, a while. I mean, I say unfortunately because I feel bad I didn't think of it right away, but it had been going on for a while when suddenly I was like, wait, why is that young man not in the dance class? And I'm like, hey, we got to, you know, we have to arrange for him to come to the dance class. And he came into the dance class and was just looking around with his eyes like, what in, you know, you would have thought we dropped him into the meerkat enclosure at the zoo. He's like, who are these people? What are they doing? Why am I with them? I do not understand this. And, you know, he did have support with him to encourage him to engage and explain what was going on. And his first hour of dance class was wide eyes and looking at everybody like, I don't get this. And he, dance class really grew on him, and he was great, you know, over the next several sessions that he was able to go to in practicing his imitation skills, following directions. He started to really, I think once he figured out what was going on, then he was able to enjoy the music and move. So saying that stepping out of what is the norm is really important so that people have some choices and some thoughts about where they go to, what they do afterwards. So I guess I'm saying be creative and explore, which feeds into one of the obstacles, which is a restricted circle of support. And circle of support can be your family, your neighbors, the people you grew up with. As you graduate school, those things fall away and they need to be replaced with other folks. So those are challenges that you start to look at before somebody graduates. What's their circle of support going to look like? And start to build that by sampling, meeting people, going out, being creative and exploring.
So Beth, we have two things that I wanted to quickly bring up to you. First of all, do you offer resources like lists of books or actionable plans that people can use? Do you have those resources there at Texana to be able to share with clients?
Yes. If people want to contact me with their particular questions, I don't necessarily have a library list of books. I mean, I do have some resources, but if people have specific questions, I could provide some information related to those specific needs. And we do have resources, services at Texana that people can access.
And then you did mention the Autism Speaks website. They probably have some good info too. Yes. And then the second one I wanted to bring up is, how do you help families when the child is not aware of their poor hygiene? How can they help encourage better hygiene practices?
That's a difficult question without knowing the person's skill level, their in knowing them individually, what they've already tried. I guess just in general, one of the things I would advocate for is people tend to learn hygiene related to their social circle. I mean, I think unfortunately, that's a part of middle school for a lot of us. You go to middle school and people say, oh, you know, didn't you do your hair this morning? Or, you know, guys, you know, give each other a heck about, you need to wear deodorant before you play basketball. So helping people have that social circle and having a social circle that has some level of understanding of the support needed by the individual who can say, you know, at least as kindly as possible, oh, dude, you know, when you come to the gym, you got to wear more deodorant, or, you know, you got to take a shower afterwards. So peers are really helpful in that aspect. People also use social stories a lot. So mom saying, oh, honey, you've got a shower. You can't go out, you know, down the street to the park smelling like that. Social stories are just kind of giving a person a context for things like, hey, you're going to go out there and, you know, I know back when I was a kid, or I, you know, what do you think would happen to a guy who goes out to the park and he hasn't brushed his teeth and is wearing a dirty shirt? Do you think they're going to think, you know, hey, he's great looking, I want to go talk to him, even though I can kind of, you know, smell, you know, that he hasn't taken a bath in a while. So social stories are another way to go sometimes with that. But that is some difficulty. Social stories and the social groups that can help give that feedback are really important. So some challenges to adult living are unfortunately disconnected services, especially if you live in the state of Texas. I know we do not rank really well as far as service availability. That can be difficult to get the number of services needed and then getting services to communicate with each other, which I'm often surprised at, but I think families, and again, it's an advocacy skill to teach an individual, you can talk to my person that teaches my social skills class. They can help you understand, you know, what I need to do to work. So making sure that if you've got support networks, that they work together and you give permission for folks to chat and work together. Access to medical care. People are aging out of mom and dad's insurance. Definitely planning issue that needs to be looked at and can create problems with that ongoing transition into the real world if medical needs aren't taken care of. Sometimes people run into issues with law enforcement and substance abuse because it is out there. And if people, one of my favorite, probably other people listening to me isn't their favorite saying, but you know, if you give somebody something to do, is better than having them choose it sometimes, especially when you're talking about somebody who needs some support and some guidance in that area. Give them something to do or they're going to pick it and you're not going to like it, is mm-hmm. what I've said in treatment settings sometimes. So making sure that people have a full and rewarding day when they graduate and are out into the adult world can help eliminate some of those problems of getting in with the wrong crowd, so to speak, or becoming involved with substance abuse or other issues that can really escalate and cause lots of problems. I have a story I could tell here, but I think I'm running a little behind on slides, but that was just an example of somebody who had a goal that was just way overwhelming, and the story just highlights about how to address goals, that you don't have to go for the big goal, but you can break it down into small goals and work on that so that you're not dismissing the goal that they want to have. So I had a guy who he was very, very heavily into, I want to be a lawyer. He was not going to be a lawyer anytime soon. We worked down into bits and pieces of what it would look like to become a lawyer. And he realized that he needed to learn how to read. I didn't know how to read, but he was determined to be a lawyer. So we were able to not squash his dream, but tell him, you got to start with steps. And we explained the steps that, you know, we'd gone through with our careers and told him, you know, if you got to be a lawyer, you've got to, quote, study law. And in order to study law, you have to be able to read law, and convinced him that maybe attending some free adult literacy classes at the library was a great place to start. It was a place he could be involved in a group and he could be constantly working on his goal. And getting social reinforcement for that. So that's what that slide's about. Just wanted to encourage, this was, I know Michelle, you brought this up earlier about starting early. Form a team, make your plans. And I say plans, not plan, because it's better to have places to go when you need to swerve. Life throws curveballs. You need to do switch from plan A to plan L to plan K. And also, again, be a good advocate and teach your person to be an advocate to the best of their possible ability.
So this goes back to the kind of the story about being a lawyer. My student has been mainstreamed and has every expectation of going to college to become a vet tech. We're working on setting expectations and a path, but how do we get her in the extended public school programs? So that would be talking to your counselors and discussing with them, right, Beth?
Absolutely, yes. The school, if you're talking about the extended public school programs, definitely you're going to be addressing with your school, advocating. But the things that you can control other than that conversation, if somebody, again, I would bite off pieces. So if somebody's interested in a vet tech, I'm just going to ask because sometimes you know, it's not, people are interested in things that they have no experience in. And if you don't have experience and you don't know you would like it, and this person may be all over being a vet tech and be fabulous with the blood and all of the animals and the fact that some animals come in injured and cleaning up a lot of poo and vomit and, you know, messes and the smells and sometimes the fast pace. But you can start off by Saturdays volunteering at the animal shelter. So just looking at what does that thing, that the goal that they have, what does that look like, and helping to expose them to as many parts of that as a first step, while you're working on advocating to the school system to get them into the extended public programs. Because, you know, it would be, it's hard to swerve from this is what I've always wanted to do to I go to my first opportunity at a vet clinic and realize, this is horrible. These animals are getting stuck with needles and have tubes put in them. And I didn't think, you know, I thought I was going to get to pet puppies. So helping people sample their goals and break down goals into steps is really important.
Right. And talking to the schools, you know, if you have an ARD meeting or an IEP meeting set up, and you're going to talk to them about graduation is coming, is she ready? Maybe you need to be that squeaky wheel that we talked about a little bit earlier about, you know, I don't think that she's ready. I don't think that she should graduate and is ready to go out into the world. I think she should stay for this extended program, and just advocating for that. Would be beneficial.
Right. And I see somebody's looking at saying something about post-graduation programs. I tell you, one of the things that I find is so helpful is families getting together with other families and asking, what are you doing? What is your plan? I know I had a family recently who said that their person was going to I'm not familiar with the school, so kind of I don't know if I want to say special needs postgraduate school, but a college program that had people with special needs in mind in Michigan. And another mom said, well, what about the VAST program, which is a Houston Community College program? And the family's like, oh, I'm sending my person to Michigan. Nobody ever mentioned the VAST program. Don't know if it would be a good fit or not, but you can definitely ask for your guidance counselor to give those postgraduate programs. Google is a friend. I mean, you can find so many things, support groups, ARC. And again, you've got my contact information right here. So one of the things that I'm paid to do is answer questions and help lead people to resources. I can't answer all the questions, but I can help find resources. So please feel free to do that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we're running out of time today, and you might have seen how many slides I flipped through to get to Beth's contact info. We might need to have you on for a part two, Beth, because this has been great, but there's a lot more that she can provide. So please reach out to Beth with more questions that you have for her. You know, your local intellectual disability authority is going to be hugely helpful wherever you live. And if you're in Fort Bend, that's Texana. Right, Beth?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got the right one. Okay. Yes. and that's the first step that we tell so many people to reach out to, is to their local authority, because they will help you get on the waiting list for waivers and know what other resources are out there. I do see a question real quick. For applying for assistance and FAFSA. Your FAFSA is your free application for federal student aid. That is not a loan that you apply for. You're basically giving them information asking, what loans and information can I get? Can I get a loan from the government? Can I get a grant from the government? What is available? And they come back with a letter that says, this is what we'll give you, this is what you can apply for. And you decide from there which loans you might want to take out, which grants you are approved to get. So we do webinars all the time. We've got a link here in the slides that we're going to send you for our upcoming webinars, so you can see what other information we're able to provide for you. And I just want to spend a second on this page. I know it's 12:59, but We do offer a free consultation related to special needs planning and helping you find all the resources and financial planning. So that's what we focus on at Consolidated Planning Group, is the financial aspects, making sure you have your benefits in line and you don't mess up those benefits, and referring you to other experts, and doing a personal financial plan. So that's what we focus on. If you have questions about those things, make a consultation with us. It's free. It takes about 30 to 45 minutes. And from there, we can tell you how we work and what we charge and if it would be a good idea for us to move forward together. But there's also a link to our YouTube channel where all of our past webinars live, our Instagram, our podcast, and our Facebook page. So again, I really appreciate all of you for spending the hour with us today. And to Beth, thank you so much for the information that you've provided. I definitely want to have you back so that we can get the rest of the information from you, do a part two, because I know you've got so much good stuff to share. We couldn't possibly fit it all into the short time frame that we have here. So thank you, everybody. We will definitely bring you back and reach out to us with any questions.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm more than happy again to take any questions or requests for information.
Fabulous, fabulous. Okay, everybody, check your emails later on today. You'll get these slides. You'll have all of our contact info and be able to reach out to us. Have a great day. It's sunshiny and beautiful out there, so go enjoy it. Bye-bye.